What is going on, everybody? Welcome into Thursday's All-Canadian. Wade Zancata, Connor O'Neill, you've seen the title. We have a huge guest coming up today. Michael Faulds, head coach of the Laurier Golden Hawks, is going to join us. But we got some news and notes to get through before we get to that. And just wanted to take a second to remind you guys, Sawdust City Brewing Company offers brewery fresh beer delivered directly to your door. Visit their website at sawdustcitybeer.com to shop their wide variety of brews and learn more. This April, CFP listeners are getting an exclusive promo code. Use CFP during checkout to receive free shipping on all orders over $100. Shipping is available to Ontario residents only. Must be legal drinking age. Again, that is CFP during checkout to receive free shipping on orders over $100. I have cracked a nice binary double IPA. I love these. They're way too good.
I'm sticking with the Narnia tonight, but I've got it in my nice little Norway glass. Thank you to Sam and the guys over at Sawdust City. All the people, really. They are fantastic out there. We got a nice little glass to drink out of now, so I can always enjoy it in a beautiful hour-shaped glass, branded with Sawdust City beer on it. But as a reminder, the Canadian Football Perspective Podcast Network is brought to you by our friends at Fox 40, the worldwide leaders in whistle technology. For 15% off all your return-to-play whistle needs, visit fox40shop.com and enter the code CFP15 for things like the tri-layer whistle mask and more to help you return to play safely, hopefully when we get a CFL season in August. Other than that, though, more CFL news. Ticats signed all their global draft players. They got their three of their guys under contract. David Azinyan is one of those guys, the linebacker from London. He's probably my bet to make the roster at some point as well. Excited for those guys to fly over and get to work in the CFL.
We weren't necessarily overly high on David Azinyan, though. How are you feeling about that as a Ticats fan?
It's not Les Moruo, but I think he's a pretty good football player. I mean, he got picked up for a reason. He's going to come in and try and earn his spot just like everyone else. And hopefully he's one that sticks. I mean, it'd be good to see some guys from the UK come on over too.
Got that Theadric Hansen comp too. So if that's how he pans out as a Ticats fan, can't be mad at that.
Hey, I will be very okay with that if that is the case. But as we keep going, it is also the start of the NFL draft tonight. So you guys have heard us talk about these names over and over and over. We don't know if any of them are going to be heard in the first round. Probably not.
Maybe Javon Holland.
But
let's cross our fingers.
As we get into day two, day three of the NFL draft, keep your eyes open for these players. Javon Holland, Benjamin St-Juste, Chuba Hubbard, Eamon Ogbong-Bamiga, Alaric Jackson, and Josh Palmer, the receiver from Tennessee. So keep your ears open, eyes open. We will, of course, update you guys next week as we're going to have a small little Tuesday episode before the CFL draft kicks off where we're just going to kind of recap where those guys get to go.
Why are we having a short episode on Tuesday, Wade?
Because we are going to be live streaming the CFL draft in its entirety. You can head over to Twitch and you can put in username CF Perspective, same as our Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. We keep it consistent for you guys, so it's easy to find. Same header as was on the old, or same header that was on the old website. I think it's on our Twitter platform still as well. So you can use that to kind of make sure you get the right one. You guys know the logo, of course, as I'm losing my directions. I got to keep my lefts and rights balanced.
Always use the L's. I still do that, and I'm 25.
But no, you guys can join in. We are, of course, going to be there. We may have a couple Sawdust City brews with us. Got to keep Sam.
Definitely.
I mean, definitely. But if you're drinking the double binary over there, you can't have too many.
No,
one
they're
is
heavy.
Worth three. So, no, we're going to have a couple. We're going to be breaking down some of the picks for you guys as well. And we are also working on trying to bring in some guests so that you're not just listening to Connor and I ramble on for hours upon end. But with that, we hope to see you guys there. We're expecting a good draft. I mean, lots of players going to be selected. Hopefully we're right on a couple spots too. That's never a bad thing to have. But no, I'm excited, and hopefully everyone can join.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Like Wade said, it's going to be over on Twitch. We are going to be on there as soon as the draft starts. We're going to be on there for every single pick, bringing you guys the pick and our thoughts on the pick as well. Hopefully bringing in some guests, just like Wade did say. So it's going to be a fun night. We're going to have some sawdust cities, and it's football. It's the CFL draft. First signs of a season.
It is the kickoff of the 2021 season in football. The NFL draft kicks it off for them. That's when all the hype starts to build, because you can finally see your team being put together. Same thing goes for the CFL. You want to see your team. It provides hope. Everyone has hope after the draft. We have these guys. They're going to come in and kill it, and we can definitely make a push for the East or the West finals. We can definitely make a push to that Grey Cup. Really, if you're the Red Blacks, then I don't think you're pushing for the Grey Cup, but you can still have hope.
Easy. It's going to be a weird year. Anything can happen.
It is. Honestly, the Red Blacks making it to the East Final would not shock me.
Hey, they won the Grey Cup with a losing record, so.
They did. So anything is possible in the CFL. But definitely Kevin check Garnett in. Quote. I am not going to go there. I do not have a basketball to toss into the ceiling of my house. But no, very excited to bring the draft to you guys. Obviously free to watch, free to join in. All you need is some internet. And if you want to have a drink or two, we prefer you have Sawdust City. But if not, anything will do. Just come and enjoy the night and enjoy the draft.
So excited to get there. So excited for draft night. Cannot wait to see which Edmonton Elk jersey I will be purchasing. Just kidding. It's going to be Kwaku Boateng jersey, but I'm excited for draft season.
With the Laurier Golden Hawks, we would like to now welcome in Wilfrid Laurier University's football team, the Laurier Golden Hawks, their head coach, Michael Faulds, spectacular player in his time as well. But hope you guys enjoy this interview.
Joining us on the All-Canadian, a name that needs no introduction, Michael Faulds, the head coach at Wilfrid Laurier University, an incredible player in his own right, and now has built an absolute powerhouse over with the Laurier Golden Hawks. Coach, thank you so much for joining us today.
Appreciate you guys having me on to talk some football in the middle of a stay-at-home in a pandemic. So what a better thing to do than talk university football.
Absolutely. We're going to start not with your playing career. We'll get to that. We'll kind of end on that note. But we're going to start with the guys who are kind of hot topics right now in Canadian football world. And that's your two prospects, Bryce Bell and Alfred Green, who are looking to be selected in next week's draft. How do you think these guys separate themselves from others at their positions?
Yeah, so I think they're both really like highly sought after players, and all nine teams have called about both of them. So they're somewhere they're going to find a home. With Alfred, he kind of comes along a long list of defensive ends from Laurier, right? So you look back to my first years here, it was S.A. Marabwe-Ajufo who went in the first round. Then we had obviously Kwaku Boateng, mm-hmm. We had Rashari Henry, most recently Robbie Smith and Sam Achampong. So it seems like every single year a defense alignment from Laurier is being drafted. So kudos to Coach Van Moorkirk, our defensive coordinator and D-line coach. But Alfred is, you know, very similar to those guys in the sense that he has great athletic ability. So obviously not everyone can be a starting Canadian D end like Kwaku Boateng is, and even Robbie Smith found himself at times. Most Canadian D ends find themselves on special teams, and Alfred is definitely athletic enough to do that, but also talent enough that, you know, in time can find himself as a starting defensive end one day. And then Bryce Bell is just a gritty offensive lineman who can really play inside and play center. Like most Canadian university teams, you tend to play your best offensive lineman at tackle. But most teams we talk to, they want to play Bryce because of how smart he is. He's in our business school. probably at center or guard. And Bryce is one of those guys, amazingly enough, you find offensive linemen, they're either 300 pounders their whole life, or they're a guy like Bryce who came in at 225 and every single year kind of put on 10 to 15 pounds and did it the hard way. And that's what, you know, whatever team drafts Bryce, they're going to get. So we expect to hear both of their names called. And, you know, selfishly, obviously we'd love to have them back, just like every coach would love to have their seniors back. But, like all the Golden Hawks who have gone before them to the CFL, we're going to wish them well.
And I just want to circle back quickly to Alfred Green. To me, like when I'm watching this guy on tape, he screams, Wade and I like to call them like the F the play up guys or the mess the play up guys, right? Like they don't necessarily show up on the stat sheet every game, but their impact is being felt on every single play. So, I mean, kind of speaking to that, what does Alfred Green bring to your defense?
Well, I think you need to, you know, the best defenders have a little bit of crazy in them, right? So Alfred is one of those guys, you know, he's loved in the locker room. And he's very gifted, right? So our Laurier football graphics are all by Alfred.
Oh, wow.
He also has his own clothing line. Like he's very artistic, very gifted and very passionate in a whole bunch of things. But between the whistles on Saturday afternoons, he's got a lot of dog in him. So when you mention not always, you know, on the stat sheet, but just creating havoc for opposing offenses, that's a good way to sum up Alfred. And I feel like in the CFL, especially if you're going to kind of, you know, start by playing special teams, you have to have that crazy attitude to run down on kickoff or be on the punt team. So I think he's going to suit that whatever system very well.
And with both of these guys, you've talked about them on the field. You kind of touched on it there with Alfred Green off the field, how artistic he is, and I mean, that's fantastic. He does all the graphics for you guys. Who is Bryce Bell then off the football field or in your locker room?
So Bryce is one of those guys that you definitely could introduce to mom and dad. Like he's a business school student. So he's an A-plus student. And in fact, it's pretty funny. Like our business school, Lazaritas School of Business, often guys have to do a presentation in a full suit, shirt and tie. So Alfred will go to class, do a presentation in a shirt and tie, and he's the same guy in practice who's almost getting into fights, who's got that grittiness, who's, you know, got that little bit of a crazy side. So I really like how he's able to turn it on and off. He's going to be super successful in whatever he does in life, but he's really driven to be the best football player he can be. And even throughout this pandemic, you know, lockdown, out of lockdown, lockdown, out of lockdown, he's found a way to get better, you know, and I've said that to our whole team. Some guys are going to stay the same. Some guys are going to use the pandemic as an excuse. The elite players are going to find a way to still get better. And both Bryce and Alfred are those type of guys.
And with a guy like Bryce Bell, you mentioned that he's an A-plus student, that he's a business school student, that he's a very good academic. I once had a coach tell me, I won't say what coach or where it was, but they always used to say, you know, school first, football second. And for those that are maybe listening, not watching, when I said school first, I held up two fingers. How important are academics to you and the Laurier football program? Because I think that is just, that's a part of U Sports football that just doesn't get talked about enough, I don't think.
Yeah, it's really important. Like what I said to our guys last year when the pandemic essentially started, or at least in June when the OUA season officially got canceled, I said, guys, do you realize if CFL training camps had happened in 2020, we would have had 17 Golden Hawks in CFL training camps. And then I followed that up with a statement saying, all 17 of them are getting $0 for playing professional football this year. So if you don't think education and the real reason you're here at Laurier is to get that education, I said, we're all blessed and gifted to play the sport we love, but at any moment it can be taken away. And oftentimes when coaches are saying that song and dance, they're talking about injury or you lose passion for the sport or whatever reason you leave the sport. Little did we know that a global pandemic would shut down sports across the world, right? So I think everyone, because of the adversity we've had to go through, have really put their foot on the gas in terms of academics. In fact, you know, our Laurier football players had their highest GPA for a fall that they have in several years. So it is super important, and both Alfred and Bryce have set themselves up that football is a great bonus and they want to take it as far as they can. But I think we're all aware how long a pro career really is. So setting yourself up for after football is something that all student athletes have to do.
And with the academic side of things, you talked about how Alfred and Bryce have set themselves up to be the future. But those guys are also role models within your team. And from an outside perspective, looking at Laurier football, it always seems like you guys have such a strong culture, such a strong foundation. When you came in, as you turned the program around, how important were academics to building that foundation?
Yeah, super important. The academics are important, but also the support systems that go along with it. So our philosophy since I've been here, and you can track it, is to bring in a recruiting class of 25 to 30 and no more. Right? There are some teams, and they'll remain nameless, but that year after year bring in 40 to 50 players, right? So I'm no mathematician, but I know as a youth sports head coach, mm-hmm. I'm only allowed to start training camp with 110 players. So these teams that year after year bring in 40 players a year, right? You quickly do the math. That's 160 players over 4 years. So what happens if we have to be at 110? What happens to those other 50? Whereas our philosophy with Laurier football is hitting on those 25 and ensuring that the support systems are there so that in year two, maybe there's an attrition of one or two, but we're not going from 40 to 27 to 15. And all of a sudden, everyone you came in with is no longer there, mm-hmm. right? So it's been that stability piece and that retention rate that has been super important for us. Does it always guarantee you win every game? No. But, you know, our program is more about what we're doing 365 days a year, not just concentrating on the 8 days that we're fortunate to play a football game. Mm-hmm.
And as you've been growing that program and been building that program, I mean, 2016 was a hell of a year. Coach of the year for yourself. You guys were the Yates Cup champions. What has been the toughest part about kind of coming in 2013 and now taking Laurier football to where it is now?
Yeah, I would just say, like, it's fun when you're a part of a climb, right? So my first year, there were very little expectations. Obviously, I was a new coach. I had played my playing career at a rival school. I had no head coaching experience. I was only 29 years old. So there was a lot of chips stacked against us and a lot of people on the periphery saying, well, it's no surprise, this isn't going to work too well. People inside the program knew that in 2013, even though we were 1-7, we were very competitive, right? We had lost a couple games in overtime. We were even the only team in the OUA to be beating Western at halftime. The chips just didn't fall our way. We followed it up with 2 4-4 seasons and including one of our first playoff wins in 2015. And then obviously in 2016, you know, got to stand on stage with the Yates Cup. So it was a quick rise. But at the same time, there's no patting yourself on the back because now all of a sudden everyone's pointing to you. So we were able to go back in 2017 and Western was definitely on a revenge tour and, you know, very deservedly won the Vanier Cup that year. They were a well-oiled machine. And then the last couple of years, 2018 and 2019, I would say, you know, even as far back as my playing days, the OUA in those 2 years is probably the most competitive it's mm-hmm. been ever, right? So I would say with probably fairly good accuracy before, you could circle with a pen and probably 95% accuracy pick the winners every week. Well, not in 2018 and 2019. So parity's been a good part of it. But like I said, it's all about kind of growth and, you know, helping your players develop. And obviously wins and losses are important. I'm as competitive as anyone, but I do focus on the 357 days that we don't have a football game just as much as the 8 days we do.
And with the success, you see it across all levels of football. You see the kind of coaching brain drain, they call it, down south of the border. As you guys have had such success under yourself as head coach, you guys have lost some coaches and some good ones at that. How do you handle each year those coaching, the members of your coaching staff kind of being pulled away from you guys?
Yeah, so we definitely got hit after winning the Yates Cup and had three coaches that, you know, and I was happy for them, all found themselves in full-time positions. So that's kind of the nature of the business, is that good people are going to find themselves, you know, quality full-time jobs. And those coaches at the most successful teams tend to be the ones moving around. Mm-hmm. So I think there has been some great consistency. Obviously, you know, I'd be in season 8 right now. Our defensive coordinator, Coach Van Morkerk, has been the longest tenured defensive coordinator in the province and maybe even the country. So there is some stability there. And you just have to be able to adjust. So I'm proud to say it was in a pandemic year, so no one got to see it on the field, but we brought in a really great offensive coordinator and Coach Todd Galloway, who, you know, spent a year with the Yates Cup winning McMaster Marauders. And before that was at Guelph for several years. So bringing in good quality people, whenever you lose good quality people, is super important to do.
So we've seemed to kind of take this natural chronological progression through the years. And now, you just touched on it, we reached the pandemic. We are in 2020, 2021. How has this kind of off year or non-year been for your program? And how have you guys been able to kind of take this, spin it positively, and build throughout of it?
Well, I think anyone that knows me, I try to spin everything positively. So every team meeting I have, it's about looking ahead for ways and things that we can control to allow us to become better individuals and better as a program, right? So it's very easy to be all doom and gloom and say, we're in lockdown, we can't do this, gyms are closed, we can't see each other, we can't do this. No, let's look at the things we can do. And I will say this, we're learning stuff as a staff, we're learning stuff as a program that, you know, I don't think it's safe to say we will get back to normal, but if there is a new normal that does exist, there are things we're doing in this pandemic right now in lockdown that we're going to be continue to do when we're free. So I would say attendance in meetings has been better than when we're not in a pandemic. Because just like I'm available to be on here right now in an evening, our players are available all the time, right? And the one thing I'd say too, that people kind of throw around a little too much, is the word Zoom fatigue and, you know, video conferencing fatigue. I would say our players might have that for stuff that they don't enjoy. But when we loaded up their schedule this winter semester with meetings, with virtual workouts, with O&D meetings, with positional meetings, with a guest alumni talks, attendance is damn near perfect. So that's where I throw the Zoom fatigue out the window and say we're actually meeting more in an off season than we ever have, which is pretty incredible. So, and then the positivity comes that I think in 2020, once the season got canceled, everyone actually kind of knew that things were going to get worse as the calendar year went along. Even though we're in stay at home now and cases are kind of in the 3,000s per day, which isn't great in Ontario, I think everyone is fully aware that as the calendar year goes along in 2021, things are going to get better. So that creates a lot of optimism. Obviously, the fall will be here before we know it. But even at the OUA level, there's been a lot of planning in place. I'm transparent with our guys. The 11 head football coaches in this conference have never been tighter together. Right since the start of the pandemic, I would say on average, we're meeting biweekly, which is pretty impressive. And we're all highly competitive individuals, but ultimately we just want football back and we want the student athlete experience back. So that's what keeps me positive. That's what I try to relay to, you know, our Golden Hawks.
And you touched on it there that you're pretty transparent with your players. Why do you feel you have such a good relationship with your guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a trust that's been built up over years. So I think one of the things I really try to do is walk the walk. So, you know, when I say there's 6 a.m. workouts throughout the winter semester, it's me with the clipboard there taking attendance. I don't pawn that off on another staff member. I don't, you know, sit at home while those things are happening. You know, just this spring when we were trying to get ready for these potted practices, you know, the Waterloo region was in category red. So we were allowed 25 people out there at a time. And Mother Nature had a different story for us. We got snowstorm after snowstorm. It was me out there shoveling the field. And, you know, if the odd player, if the odd coach wanted to help, I thanked them and they helped me. But I wasn't going to let anything stop us. So I think respect has been gained because the guys know how badly I want it. And then when I ask them for something, obviously they're pretty willing to go that extra mile, knowing how hard I'm going to go for them.
And how important is it to you as a coach to not only like be a part of it, but also to see it within your own locker room, like whether it's player to player or player to position coach, but just having rock solid locker room chemistry and rock solid team chemistry?
Yeah, I think it's important. And where you notice it the most is when you're going through bouts of adversity, right? So everything's pretty, you know, glamorous when you're in a locker room that's undefeated, right? But that first bout of adversity that you face, whether it's a loss, whether, you know, maybe one of your players lost a parent, maybe, you know, there's some other bout of adversity, maybe it's a global pandemic. You quickly realize how tight your locker room is when things aren't all rosy. So I would say whether it's, you know, the stuff going on with the social injustice in the world, whether it's, you know, the global pandemic, our team has been pretty rock solid and pretty tight together. And we've continued on with meetings throughout, right? So there hasn't been a dry spell where our team isn't in front of each other. At least, you know, oftentimes weekly basis, several times a week, but at the very least bi-weekly.
You touched on the social injustice piece from what's been going on in recent news. I mean, obviously with the trial coming to an end last week and then more tragic events happening. Last year when the murder of George Floyd went through and kind of sent echoes across the world, Connor and I tried to sit down with guys like Nate Behar and talk about it. How has your team kind of been able to talk to each other and kind of grow in that sense together?
Yeah, so everyone handles things differently, right? So some guys don't like to talk about it. Some guys like to, you know, be quiet about it. Some guys like to speak their mind. So we tried to create avenues and pathways for guys to be able to speak up. Obviously, as coaches, as a white coach, a coach of privilege, I tried to open myself up to be just a listener, to be open to ideas that the players might have, and to let everyone know that our team stance was to be an ally and to not be silent, right? To let it be known that things that are going on in the world aren't okay and there needs to be change. So I think everyone respected that. And that's kind of the approach we took. So constantly reaching out to our Black players, trying to get them in groups to be together, and just create that comfort level for our student athletes in what, you know, is a crazy world around us.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we just have one or two more here before we get to your playing career, because that's when the fun stuff starts. This one's kind of lighthearted to kind of switch tones. The Battle of Waterloo. I mean, you played at Western. We're going to get there. You're kind of everyone's rival when you're at Western. But when you're at Laurier now, you have a distinct crosstown rival in the Waterloo Warriors. Do you want to talk us through your kind of experiences playing against the Waterloo Warriors?
Yeah, no, it's been really good. And, you know, Chris Bertoia, Coach Bertoia over there is, you know, a good friend of mine. So my last year as a player at Western, he was a coach at Western. So I got to know him then. And even though it was a Battle of Waterloo every single year this game's been in existence, it really wasn't a battle until Coach Bertoia had a couple years under the helm. So the last couple of years, I think everyone has, you know, realized how good the games have been. So in 2018, Waterloo got the best of us on a pretty pass from Ford to Turnowski, which is very common connection. And then in 2019, in a must-win game for us, it went down to triple overtime over at their stadium. So it is pretty cool. Like, we're literally across the street from each other in a pandemic, in the off-season. Our guys are, our teams are throwing the ball around together. They're working out together. You know, they're at the same kind of gatherings together. So there is a common respect, and, you know, but for those 3 hours once a year, it is highly competitive. And I'd say that's good for the sport, right? So when you look at Carleton versus the GGs, that's awesome. You know, the Battle of Waterloo is now really good. York-Toronto has been historically a close game. So, you know, there's starting to be some really good rivalries throughout the OUA, and we definitely circle the Battle of Waterloo every year now.
Much like the Panda game, which is a crazy experience. But we are going to get into your playing career, which needs no introduction, really. But for those younger than my generation, when you ended your career, you were the CIS, which for those younger than me is U Sports now. You were the all-time passing leader, two-time Yates Cup MVP, two-time Yates Cup winner, OUA Player of the Year, and you played in one of the most iconic games of the last 20 years. But how, I guess I said we're getting into playing stuff, but I'm going to ask a coaching question. How has your quarterback career kind of helped you in your coaching career?
Yeah, I would just say when you're a quarterback, you obviously are told from a young age, you have to know what the other 11 guys around you have to do. So I think you're already slightly seeing football from a coach's lens. And then I'd also say as a player, I kind of knew very early on that being a CFL quarterback as a Canadian wasn't as likely. So I started to already plan that, you know, if I want a life in football, chances are it's not playing forever. Why not think about coaching? So every decision Coach Haller made early in my career and every decision Coach Marshall made later in my career and all the positional coaches, I really made notes. I wasn't physically there with pen and paper, but I was making mental notes. If I'm ever in a position of authority, you know, what am I going to do with this decision? So I kind of was always prepping myself, and I think quarterback helps you do that. And I was actually at our Laurier Football Coaches Clinic maybe about a month ago. I actually brought that up, how many former quarterbacks are coaches, you know, whether it's Tommy Dennison, Asher Hastings, Josh Jacoby, John B, like the list goes on and on of former, you know, good quarterbacks that are now into coaching. And I really do think it helps.
Yeah. And this is going to kind of bounce again to your coaching. You won back-to-back Yates Cups. How did your team kind of sustain winning when you're at Western? And then have you brought those things with you to Laurier?
Yeah, well, I think as the kids would say, it's helped my street cred. So not to say that you have to be a good player to be a good coach. Mm. You know, I think there are millions of examples. You know, Nick Saban and Belichick might be the two best coaches in the world, but, you know, definitely weren't the best players. So, but I think it helps you early on gain respect and trust, whether that's right or wrong. So I always talk about needing blind trust when you first meet someone. I think because of my playing resume, I already get that blind trust that some coaches might not. And then, you know, once they get to know me, the work ethic and how badly I want it, then the trust is real. So yeah, I would say that's helped me in my coaching career for sure.
Football seems to be one of these sports where more than other sports, it is a sport of culture, and you're in a culture of winning at Western. Have you brought some of that and some of the values that you kind of came to appreciate at Western to your coaching career now at Laurier?
Yeah, I would say so. And I'd actually add another stop in there. So at Western, we had everything. And I think everyone knows that they're kind of, you know, they'd be called the Yankees of, you know, OUA football. But then I coached for 3 years at York University, and we had nothing there. So We didn't have a strength program at the time. We didn't even have whiteboards in the coaching offices. We really had nothing. And I look at those 3 years as really helping my coaching career, because I made a ton of mistakes, but I wasn't under a microscope. And I really got to learn about myself as a coach, and really how to make stuff happen with not the pieces that Western has, right? So then coming somewhere in between to a place like Laurier, and quickly being able to recruit some of these super talented players, many of which, you know, have gone on to the pros now. Now using kind of that York work ethic with that culture and tradition of Western, it's really set up a good kind of, you know, feeling that we have here at Laurier football. So the culture has been strong.
All right, Connor, I think it's time we get to it.
I have to.
Okay, full for our listeners, I was 11 years old. Connor was 12 years old. We were both there at this game, rooting, unfortunately for you, Coach Faulds, for the Queens Golden Gales.
I was going to say, I might have partaken in a few of those Walk Festern chants, but
it's all good.
For our audience, the 2009 Yates Cup at Richardson Stadium, when it was natural grass, the best stadium when it was natural grass. 43-39, over 1200 yards of offense, a bunch of lead changes, crowd is going nuts. Coach Faulds was there leading Western to hopefully a three-peat at the Yates Cup. Unfortunately, they fell short, but what an incredible game that has lived on in the lores of Canadian university football. What is your initial, like, when you first hear 2009 Yates, what do you think first of?
Well, you can see I'm smiling, and I do think of that year and that game fondly, right? So people are probably thinking, oh, it's heartbreak. He had the knee injury. Like, you know, it's super sad to see how he went out. But no, I think it was sad in the moment. But the more I reflect on it, the more I look back, the more I, you know, hear your reaction to it, Wade and Connor, of, you know, you guys when you were, you know, just young guys, and the impact it had on you, it makes you realize, okay, it was bigger than who won or lost, right? If, you know, Danny Branigan and Queens had lost, you know, 43-39, it still would have been a great game, right? So not too often do you get two quarterbacks both throwing over 500 yards. You already mentioned the atmosphere there was just incredible. So it really was kind of in an era and the pinnacle of OUA football. You know, even as far as Tim McAuliffe on the broadcast, my best buddy, DJ Bennett, was a sideline reporter, which was pretty, you know, special getting to chat with him after the game. So if you just add it all up, it was unbelievable. Sure, I'd love to go back and be healthy and, you know, win the football game, but I do look back at it with a lot of fond memories.
I think I remember, like, in that game, that was the game where I think at the end of the game, I looked up at my dad and I was like, I want to play Canadian university football. This is what I want to do. Like, screw hockey. I want to go play football. But to you, you talked about the knee injury, and can you just, for those who might not have been there or might not be old enough to remember, can you just kind of walk us through that game and the knee injury and everything that was really going on? I mean, you had a torn ACL that game and you still threw over 500 yards.
Yeah. So the unfortunate thing, and I think, you know, some of my teammates and some of my coaches probably figured it out, but I had a torn ACL as of week 4. But the challenge is, you know, I'd already consumed my senior year of eligibility, right? As soon as you dress for that second game, your year of eligibility is done. So I knew this was my last opportunity to play football. Obviously, it wasn't a position like linebacker, DB, or receiver where you're running a ton. I just had to use my brain, use my strong right arm, and physically try to put our other skilled players in good positions with the football. So I was able to manage that kind of week in and week out, but the knee would give out every single game. And, you know, it was excruciating pain as it would slip, but then I would usually miss, you know, a play or two or maybe even a drive. And then the pain would subside and I'd go back in and finish the game. My weeks were pretty crazy of, you know, having the knee drained and, you know, trying to be healthy then for the next week, but I wasn't going to let anyone tell me, you know, I wasn't going to play. So, you know, as a coach now, you know, I might be ridiculed saying, how could you let a player play if he's injured and things like that? I would say 100%, if it's anywhere around the head or neck, you 100% follow that. You follow the medical professionals. I would have signed any waiver saying I'm signing up for the risk I'm putting my knee under to play my senior year. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. So, like I said, every game it went out, but I was able to finish every game. And it just so happened to be, unfortunately, that in that Yates Cup, it lasted, you know, for 59 minutes. And, you know, it finally went out in that final drive. And this time the meniscus physically flipped. So my knee was, you know, locked in, you know, not a straight or a bent position. It was kind of at a weird angle. So, you know, I thank Coach Marshall to this day for allowing me out there for one last play, but, you know, unfortunately, the game ended and that's all she wrote.
So with a back like Nathan Riva, cause as Connor kind of looking into this, I was like, oh yeah, Nathan Riva was on that team. Like, wow. Anytime you felt your knee go, was it kind of like on the sidelines to Coach Marshall? Hey, let's just kind of hand the ball off. Like, I got a stellar back behind me. Like, let's kind of take the load off the knee. Or were you ever kind of asking to change the game plan around that?
Well, what's interesting, so the week before that famous Yates, we as Western had to travel to Laurier, which is pretty funny how I'm coaching here now. But in that game, my knee slipped out in the second quarter and it absolutely ballooned. So I was a shadow of, you know, my normal self. And I exactly as you said, Wade, I think Riva might have had 280 yards in that semifinal playoff game. So, you know, we had some dynamic weapons. I also had, you know, several go-to receivers who, you know, over my time there, we spent countless hours working on deep comebacks and deep digs, which we were famous for. But yeah, whenever my knee was unsettled, we relied on Riva. Unfortunately, with a minute left in the Yates, when you've got to get chunks of yards, we couldn't do that.
And for that year as well, that was a year where you and Danny Brannigan, who you mentioned was the Queens quarterback, you guys were kind of fighting for that all-time CIS record. Like, it was kind of like, oh, one game, Fald would throw for 400 and take over, and then the next week, Brannigan would edge him out by 50 yards and then take over, and it just kind of kept going down to the wire. So did you and Danny Brannigan, or have you guys ever talked about that back and forth from that year?
Not really. We have some common friends. I ended up playing for, you know, the senior Team Canada team that in 2011 went over to Austria. And there were a couple of Queens guys on that team that I became friends with. But no, we never officially chatted about it. There was always a common respect. One off season in high school, we actually trained together a little bit. So got to, you know, build a relationship. So, and what's funny too, is it wasn't just Danny and I, like the OUA was loaded then with quarterbacks. So Justin Dunk was a fifth year quarterback at Guelph. Josh Jacoby was at Ottawa. So, you know, you go down the list, the OUA had some stellar quarterback play. And that's what made it so much fun week in and week out is, you know, you were having some great matchups.
And I mean, consistently, something that's been kind of tagged on with the OUA is quarterback play. Like through the years, there's been some phenomenal quarterbacks, but I want to go to the 2019 Yates Cup. Now, 10 years later, we have Chris Merchant battling it out with Andreas Dueck. Unfortunately, Chris Merchant goes down with an injury. Does that kind of, I mean, maybe you were, maybe you weren't watching that game, get seeing that in your former team and now the quarterback kind of going through a similar situation. Did that kind of give you flashbacks?
Yeah, I was watching, you know, and I was rooting for Chris. Like, obviously, I felt sick for him not being able to finish the game. And it did. Like, my phone was blowing up as it was going on saying, are you watching? Are you watching? I missed the first half, but tuned in, you know, when he was trying to struggle through it. So I immediately texted him after the game and just saying, you know, how proud everyone is, not just me because I'm a Western alum, but like everyone that sees, you know, how badly he wanted, what a career he had. That was special too. So you never want someone to go out injured, but that's a part of the game and that's part of life, right? If we could all, you know, write the script of the Hollywood movie, we would do that, but that's not reality. So whether it's my career, whether it's Chris Merchant's, I think people will still look fondly back at these were good, solid careers. It's not the picture perfect, you know, retiring as a Vanier Cup champion, which we would all want.
I guess not everybody can go out. Remember the Titans. Some got to go out Friday Night Lights, right?
Exactly.
I think that's all we have for you tonight, Coach. Thank you so much for hopping on and joining us for this podcast. Really appreciate you spending your time with us.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate how you guys really try to grow the game and passionately speak about OUA and U Sports football.
Thank you, Coach. It means a lot. Take care and best of luck to the Golden Hawks.
Okay. Have a great night and have a good season in 2021.
All right. Later, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So there it is, our interview with head coach Laurier Golden Hawks, Michael Faulds. We were just absolutely like enthralled with everything you were saying the whole episode. Oh my God. I was just saying to Wade, like off air, I was like this at the screen the whole damn time waiting for him to just keep talking.
And you see when you talk to a coach like that, even Coach like when we've talked to head coaches, they all have a unique thing about them. And with him, you could see the presence and kind of the control he has when speaking that would really draw in a team and be such a great reason for them to keep building. So all the best to the Laurier Golden Hawks, all the best to the guys in the draft this upcoming week. We really hope they do well too. But as always, you know where to find us at Connor R. O'Neill on Twitter, at Wade Zank, at CF Perspective. But before we go, we just want to take one more chance to remind you that Sawdust City Brewing Company offers brewery fresh beer delivered directly to your door. Visit their website at sawdustcitybeer.com to shop their wide variety of brews and to learn more. This April, CFP listeners are getting an exclusive promo code. Use CFP, all caps, during checkout to receive free shipping on all orders over $100. Shipping is available to Ontario residents only. Must be of legal drinking age.
And to tack onto that, box40shop.com, the Canadian Football Perspective Podcast Network, is brought to you by our friends over at Fox 40. Visit fox40shop.com to check out Fox 40's latest innovation, the Fox 40 Tri-Layer Whistle Mask, helping you return to play safely. For 15% off Fox 40 products, visit fox40shop.com and enter the code CFP15. Again, all caps, CFP15. For 15% off at fox40shop.com. That rounds out the episode. Coach Faulds, if you want me to come play, I will strap the pads up for you after that episode. My goodness.
I have one more year of eligibility. I am very washed up. Never had much to stand on as to begin with, but we'll join. Take care. We'll see you on draft night.
May the 4th be with everyone.